Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
From Chicago, ladies and gentlemen, where the crowd was great last night at the historic Chicago Theater. Today, on our way to Milwaukee, some of the Le Show staff already there for the final show in the Unwig Tour at Milwaukee's Pabst Theater. If you're in the Midwest, in the vicinity, and you're listening on Sunday, come on, drive on over to Milwaukee. I think there may still be tickets. And this one gets shot for the DVD, so you can have your face there for posterity. Clearly not for prosperity, if you've seen our books. But, you know, looking artificially enthusiastic, it might be a thrill. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, the evidence is mounting that Vladimir Putin must be smiling right about now as he views the United States in Afghanistan. You know, hey, it killed our empire. Have at it. American public support for the Afghan war will dissipate in less than a year unless the administration achieves a perceptible shift in momentum. That's according to Defense Secretary Gates. Sounds like he's preparing the bunker, buying couches for the bunker. Gates says the momentum in Afghanistan is with, any guesses, Cleveland? No, the Taliban. They don't even have LeBron James, and they're winning. They're inflicting heavy U.S. casualties and hold de facto control of swaths of the country. Not SWAT, that's in Pakistan, swaths. He's moving aggressively, says the Wall Street Journal, to salvage the war in Afghanistan. Get Alexander the Great on the horn, why don't you? Another high American official says he gives us about a year. Gates says the administration is rapidly running out of time to turn the war around. People are willing to stay in the fight, I believe, if they think we're making headway, if they think we've stalemated and having our young men and women get killed, then patience is going to run out pretty fast. I believe it was the Joint Chief of Staff chairman said this week also he expects the United States to have troops in Iraq for the next 10 years. I don't know if he's told the president yet. There's new evidence about the worst of the worst, ladies and gentlemen. You know, guys we have in Gitmo. There's an Algerian, Lakhdar Boumediene. He's now in Paris. He had been in a French military clinic under physical and psychological observation since his arrival in Paris May 15th aboard a U.S. government aircraft that carried him in shackles from Gitmo to Paris. He describes it as an ugly mistake by U.S. authorities, Boumediene does. He spent 7 years at Gitmo, and he was later a plaintiff in a landmark Supreme Court case, the one that gave Gitmo detainees the right to seek judicial review of their imprisonment. He was ordered released by a U.S. district judge in Washington. France agreed to take him in, but appears to be reluctant to accept any more detainees. His version of events is impossible to verify independently. He described himself as collateral damage in the sweep-up of Gitmo recruits. An aid worker in Bosnia wrenched from his life, and he said interrogated endlessly about something about which he had no knowledge. He was an aid worker with the Red Crescent, the Islamic version of the Red Cross, because they don't use a cross. He was arrested in Bosnia along with five other Algerians accused of plotting to blow up the U.S. and British embassies in Sarajevo, charges that were later withdrawn. In January 2002, the six were turned over to U.S. officials and flown to Gitmo despite rulings by several Bosnian courts that there was no reason to deport them. Yeah, but was there any reason to keep them there? Ask yourself that. The worst of the worst, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be hearing more about that. Hey, for those of you who've been on the fence about whether to buy a Zune, you know what the Zune is? I thought not. It's the Microsoft attempt to compete with the iPod. Well, they're launching a new model of the Zune, and this is the game changer right here. They're including an HD radio tuner because they can go down together. That's When your ship is sinking, what you need is an anchor. So Zune's got the HD radio function now. Come on. You don't really, if you don't hurry now, you'll be second in line. How's the stimulus going? Texas lawmakers are planning to use $11 million in federal stimulus money to help rebuild the Texas governor's mansion. Aren't you glad you asked? Nothing for New Orleans, but $11 million for the Texas governor's mansion. Well, we're all Texans, aren't we? And nearly half of the clothing and a third of the furniture made for children in China's top manufacturing province is unsafe. Many products contain harmful chemicals. This according to Chinese state media. What does that tell you? It tells you they're trying to distract us from the anniversary of Tiananmen Square. There was an official investigation by Chinese authorities in Guangdong province, the center of China's manufactured export industry. 53% of garments surveyed met safety standards. Many contain excess amounts of formaldehyde. Formaldehyde can't hurt you. We heard that from the formaldehyde industry just last week. As for children's furniture, 67% of it was deemed safe, with some of the questionable products containing too much formaldehyde or health-endangering heavy metals, including lead, cadmium, and chromium. The main reason for the excessive content of formaldehyde and heavy metals is the use of substandard raw materials and paints, says the province's Product Safety Administration spokesman. Is that all? Just substandard products? That ain't nothing. Ladies and gentlemen, here's a substandard broadcast product for you. Hello, welcome to the show. We'll be right back. From the edge of Lake Michigan, from Chicago, Illinois, I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this week's edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. I'm welcoming you like the automated voice on the intercom here at WBEZ.
Don't press the button.
From McClatchy newspapers, more on this whole idea of the worst of the worst. You may want to sit down for this, or if you're sitting down, you may want to stand up for this. A McClatchy investigation has found that instead of confining terrorists, Guantanamo often produced more of them by rounding up common criminals, conscripts, low-level foot soldiers, and men with no allegiance to radical Islam, thus inspiring a deep hatred of the United States in them, and then housing them in cells next to radical Islamists. The radicals were quick to exploit the flaws in the U.S. detention system. Soldiers, guards, or interrogators at the U.S. bases at Bagram or Kandahar in Afghanistan had abused many of the detainees before they ever got to Gitmo, and they already arrived there enraged at the U.S. of A. The Taliban and Al-Qaeda leaders in the cells around them were ready to preach their firebrand interpretation of Islam and the need to wage jihad against the West. Guantanamo became a school for jihad, complete with a council of elders who issued fatwas to the other detainees. Reverend Rear Admiral Mark Busby, until recently the commanding officer at Guantanamo, acknowledged that senior militant leaders gained influence and control in his prison. We have that full range of Taliban and Al-Qaeda leadership here. Why would they not continue to be functional as an organization? He said in the telephone interview. Afghan and Pakistani officials also said they were aware Guantanamo was churning out new militant leaders. In a classified 2005 review of 35 detainees released from Gitmo, Pakistani police intelligence concluded that the men, the majority of whom had been subjected to what the Pakistanis called, quote, severe mental and physical torture, unquote, had extreme feelings of resentment and hatred against the USA. The report warned that unless steps were taken to rehabilitate the men, they had the potential of becoming another Abdullah Massoud, a former Guantanamo detainee who became a high-ranking Taliban commander in the Pakistani tribal areas. A lot of our friends are working against the Americans now because if you torture someone without any reason, what do you expect? Said a former Pakistani detainee. Many people who are in Guantanamo are now working with the Taliban. In interviews, former U.S. Defense Department officials acknowledged the problem, but none of them would speak about it openly because of its implications. It's a good reason to keep quiet. I don't like the implications. U.S. officials mistakenly sent a lot of men who weren't hardened terrorists to Guantanamo, supposedly the implication drawn by McClatchy, but by the time they were released, some of them had become just that. Requests for comment from senior Defense Department officials went unanswered. Huh. The Pentagon official declined interview requests after she was given a list of questions. Well, next time, give her the answers. Then she'll reply. However, dozens of former detainees, many of whom were reluctant to talk for fear of being branded as spies, described a network at times fragmented, at times startling in its sophistication, that allowed Islamic radicals to gain power inside Guantanamo. American officials tried to stop detainees from turning Guantanamo into what some former U.S. officials have called an American madrasa. But some of their efforts backfired. The original Guantanamo camp, Camp X-Ray, was little more than a collection of wire mesh cells in which detainees were grouped together without much concern for their backgrounds. In 2002, U.S. officials shifted the detainees to Camp Delta, which grew to include a series of camps organized by security level, which was supposed to provide better security. The idea, the detainees who presented graver threats and were uncooperative would be separated from those with looser ties to international terrorism. What the plan overlooked, according to several detainees and a former U.S. defense official who spoke on condition of anonymity because of the sensitivity of the subject and of his knees, is that even mid-level al-Qaeda members had been trained in resistance techniques, and one of them was to avoid calling attention to yourself. So an angry cab driver from Kabul may have been more likely to attack a guard and end up in a high-security camp than an al-Qaeda militant was. As a result, some senior radicals ended up in a looser security camp, free to preach their message of international jihad to petty criminals, Taliban conscripts, and detainees who had little or no previous affiliation with the Islamic military. So much for recidivism, ladies and gentlemen. And a story that went from outside the bubble to it got inside this bubble this week. The British newspaper, The Telegraph, took time out from its main work of the last three weeks. No, not reporting on Susan Boyle. Reporting on the expense claims of members of Parliament, which has sparked, as you may have heard, a major, major political scandal in the United Kingdom. As I say, The Telegraph has been running those stories every day. They took time out to, a couple weeks ago, publish the story about the abuse photos being leaked in an Australian medium, a story which did not make it to the United States, except for this broadcast and Frank Rich's column. But this week, The Telegraph took time out from the parliamentary expense scandal to report that some of the thousands of photographs not yet released by the Pentagon went way farther than any of us had seen or heard previously. That report was denied by the White House spokesman, Robert Gibbs, who used the opportunity to launch into an attack on the British press and its ability to report anything factually. So, The Telegraph responded. A former senior U.S. Army officer who spoke to the Daily Telegraph about photographs of rape and sexual abuse at Abu Ghraib has confirmed the story despite denials from the White House. The Telegraph reported that photographs showed a soldier apparently raping a female prisoner, a translator apparently raping a male prisoner, and instances of sexual abuse involving objects. The White House spokesman says the Telegraph report mischaracterizes the photos. But Major General Antonio Taguba, who retired from the Army in January 2007 after writing a critical report on Abu Ghraib, an official critical report, has confirmed that the quotes the Daily Telegraph ran were accurate in comments he made to an American website. He had told the Telegraph the pictures show torture, abuse, rape, and every indecency, and that he didn't believe they should be released. Major General Taguba clarified that the photographs in the ACLU lawsuit I have not seen, but confirmed that the images of rape and abuse were among hundreds of images he did review as an investigator of the abuses at Abu Ghraib. Further confirmation of the story was provided on Friday by Scott Horton, a human rights lawyer who wrote on another website he'd obtained specific corroboration of the British account from several reliable sources, including a highly credible senior military officer with firsthand knowledge who provided even more detail about the graphic photographs. A Pentagon spokesman said the Defense Department had reviewed all the pictures they were preparing for release, which did not include any of the scenes described. He was, quote, not aware that any other photographs had been destroyed. There's some weasel range right there. Wasn't aware that anything was destroyed. Well, nobody, I didn't know that anybody had said they were. I just knew they weren't released yet. Destroyed? You mean like CIA videotapes of the... And from the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch. Hi, Rup. Millions of pounds, this is British money, millions of pounds in taxpayers' money have been wasted on failed reconstruction projects in Afghanistan, according to an internal assessment by the Department for International Development. Poor planning, poor risk management and staffing, and poor coordination. More than half of the department's large project in which millions of dollars were deemed likely to fail, excluding a World Bank project. There was potentially catastrophic consequences if weaknesses in the program were not corrected. That'll win the war. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Oh, I'm still here.
I'm right over here.
I'm just
playing with machines. And now,
he's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an Inspector General. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The Interior Department's Inspector General has found widespread mishandling and erratic tracking of just special passports issued to department officials traveling overseas, alleging that in numerous instances employees violated federal privacy laws by improperly securing passports and passport application forms. Who would want those? In some cases, officials couldn't account for expired passports of former employees and could not locate a passport once issued to former Interior Secretary Gail Norton. The Inspector General's report warned that such mismanagement and lax protection could result in cases of fraud or identity theft that would have an impact on current and former Interior Department employees. Yeah, like who would want a government passport, you know? That wouldn't be worth anything to anybody. Given the risk of misuse that missing and unsecured passports, visas, and passport applications pose, we cannot understate the importance of acting swiftly to address these violations and prevent their recurrence, says Acting Interior Inspector General Mary Kendall, claiming widespread mismanagement of records at the passport offices in the department. Investigators found about 200 files containing applications and expired passports stacked on unsecured shelves and spilled onto the floor. Hey, that sounds like my office. I could run that place. Passport agents appeared to give more security to passports than passport applications, even though the applications contain more sensitive personal information than passports. Agents also admitted they had kept applications and expired passports on record longer than allowed by federal regulations. Despite their required attendance at annual Privacy Act training courses, most staffers didn't know how to properly handle sensitive personal information. And agents could not account for at least 49 expired passports of former employees, and many more may be missing. Employees must surrender their official or diplomatic passports upon leaving their Interior Department. A former Mineral Management Services employee who pleaded guilty last September to felony charges that he helped arrange contracts that benefited him on his retirement. Well, that's not really corrupt. Oh, yes, it is. Had failed to return his passport, as did a former Fish and Wildlife Service employee who resigned 3 years ago after two investigations for violations of ethics standards. But it gets better. Another Inspector General report, this one from the Pentagon. The U.S. Special Operations Command, which runs Army Special Forces units worldwide, has been criticized by the Pentagon Inspector General for not providing adequate oversight of $1.7 billion in logistics support contracts and for allowing contractors to perform what are considered inherently government functions. That's special oops. Federal rules prohibit hiring contractors who perform actions reserved for government employees, yet a Special Ops Command unit managing an L-3 communications contract permitted contractor approval of such matters as overtime and acceptably completed work. We'll approve our own work. Thank you. No L-3 communications official was available to comment. They were busy inspecting, approving their own work. The report pointed out no quality assurance plan was developed for tasks that would typically guide contracting officers in determining whether contracting tasks were being completed as required. Instead, the special ops unit relied on complaints from those receiving the contractor services to determine whether there were problems. Hey, squeaky wheel, babe. News from Inspector General. Ladies and gentlemen, the copyrighted feature of this broadcast and two American Indian tribes say they're pleased to have the federal government remove medical uranium and other radioactive waste from their land have been ignored, and they want it cleaned up. Navajo and Hopi officials say the waste is contaminating their land and threatening water supplies. The Hopis threatened to sue. The Navajo Nation filed a motion to intervene in an already existing lawsuit. There are contaminants affecting the shallow water, says a director of the Navajo Environmental Protection Agency. But there's still differences between the tribes and the U.S. government. So take another 100 years to work it out. It's only water.
Well, you know your time has come, and you're sorry for what you've done. You should have never been playing with a gun and those complicated shadows.
Well, there's a line that you must toe, and it'll soon be time to go. But it's darker than you know in those complicated shadows. All you gangsters and rude clowns who were shooting up the town, when you should have found someone to put the blame on. Though the fury's hot and hard, I still see that cold graveyard. There's a solitary stone that's got your name on. You don't have to take it from me, but I know of what I speak. You think you're like iron steel, but iron steel will bend and break in those complicated shadows. Sometimes justice you will find is just I'm not colorblind, and your poor shattered mind can't take it all in. All those phantoms and those shades should jump up on judgment day and say to the Almighty, I'm still thinking of sin. But the jury was dismissed, took his neck and they give it a twist. So you see, you won't be missed in those complicated shadows. You can't say just what you like in a voice like a John Ford film. Take the law into your hands, you will soon get tired of killing in those complicated shadows. Complicated shadows. Complicated shadows. Complicated shadows. Complicated shadows. Complicated shadows.
This is Le Show, and as promised, a special guest time on the broadcast again. A familiar voice. I can't really say a familiar face, but a familiar voice. Ralph the Talking Computer. Ralph, welcome back.
Thanks, Harry. Great to be with you here in Milwaukee.
Well,
the town that made the beer that made Milwaukee famous.
That is so cute and yet so dated, Ralph. Good work. What have you been up to?
Aside from being cute and dated,
yeah.
You mean?
That's right.
Well, Harry, actually, I've been involved in a little media stunt.
A media stunt? Those are always exciting. What particular kind of stunt, Ralph, were you involved with?
Well, I'm sure you've heard about the Chicago radio host who had himself waterboarded to prove it was no big deal.
Yes.
And then he found out it was a big deal after all.
Yes, indeed. I heard about him. His name is Man Cow, and he thinks that it was resembling a Beach Boys song. A hypothetical Beach Boys song called Waterboarding USA.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And if you can get past the personal bitterness, I'll resume my story.
Okay, go ahead.
So I thought that was an amusing stunt, and I asked myself,
yeah,
why don't I offer to get waterboarded? You know, for charity or publicity or something?
Charity or publicity or something. That's a good idea. So, but you're a computer. I'm not sure that would have gone over that well. Did you find somebody that was willing to put on the stunt?
Yes, Harry. Apparently you're not the only media personality who's willing to offer me airtime.
Oh, okay.
I went on the Buzz and Fatso show in Detroit.
Buzz and Fatso.
And Buzz held my cover open while Fatso poured the water.
Buzz held your cover open. Okay, and well, what happened? Was it torture?
Well, I'm a computer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a freaking human.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
No, it wasn't torture per se.
Per se.
But yes, it was bad.
Okay.
My motherboard was soaked.
Oh.
So if I hadn't been totally backed up,
yeah,
I wouldn't be talking to you today.
Well, that's, I guess, a mixed blessing. But Ralph, the key question is this. Would you have confessed had this been an actual, you know, real waterboarding session and not just the Buzz and Fatso show?
I guess the best answer to that is that it would have been counterproductive.
Really?
I mean, sure, I'd spill the bees,
yeah.
But with the flooded motherboard, there wouldn't be any bees, if you will.
If you've picked that up. All right, well, that's all very interesting, Ralph, your career in the charity or publicity field. But you've come here today, once again, to share with us some of King's things. Isn't that correct?
That's right, Harry. This is the latest collection of toots from Larry King's Twitter column, as it were.
You mean tweets?
You call them what you want to. They sound like toots to me.
Okay, here's Ralph the Talking Computer reading the latest of Larry King's things.
I like Michelle Obama. She's a great first lady who looks like she should be a movie star. I have over 200 pair of suspenders. If you want it to rain, wash your car. I guarantee it will rain. Happens to me every time. Whatever happened to galoshes? In baseball, why 4 balls and 3 strikes? If I am meeting someone at an airport, they're always the last person off the plane. One of my new favorite foods is peanut butter. Why do some baseball players leave the brims of their hats flat? Does anybody smoke a pipe anymore? What about wear a bow tie? When was the last time you saw a guy wearing a bow tie? Or a vest?
Ralph the Talking Computer, joining us from Milwaukee with Larry King's things from his Twitter column. And Ralph, beautifully read.
Thanks, Harry. I try to treat it as blank verse.
Mm.
That's just how I'm programmed.
Mm, that's a good choice. Good luck with any future waterboarding stunts. Ralph, the Talking Computer, always a pleasure.
Of course, I'm not capable of pleasure, but same here.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, I'll do some reading. Perhaps with even less feeling. Because it's time for me to read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast, don't you know? From Media Daily News, Nielsen brings clarity to high def. Yes, it's one of my favorite subjects. I'll be reading it for you, won't you? Thanks in part to America's conversion to digital broadcast spectrum next month, HD TV sets are closer to becoming the TV industry standard. But the picture may not be as clear as that. When it comes to the ability to actually receive a high-def TV signal, Americans are much slower on the uptake. These are among the conclusions of a new study on the penetration of high-definition TV by the Nielsen people. These aren't people named Nielsen now. Stay with me. There are a number of reasons that may explain this difference, the report explains. That's good writing. Starting with, there are a number. One reason is that consumers may often confuse content they view on an HD set as HD programming. not recognizing the need to upgrade their cable or satellite subscription to receive HD content, many consumers buy HD sets, connect them to their current non-HD set-top boxes, believing that what they are watching is in HD, when in fact, it is not. Nielsen estimates that a third of the U.S. population had at least one HD TV set in their homes as of February, but that only 28% were actually capable of receiving a high-definition signal in their homes. Nielsen surmised that another mitigating factor might be the additional costs associated with subscribing to high-def reception on an ongoing basis. You think? Many of the households that have purchased a high-def set bought them to replace older standard-definition models, or bought new digital TV sets thinking they had to in order to be capable of receiving a broadcast TV signal following the conversion next month. Quote, while consumers may be willing to incur a large one-time expense to buy an HD set, they may be less inclined to immediately add the monthly cost of receiving HD programming from their cable satellite service provider. This is especially true of homes with multiple sets, as each requires a separate set-top box, according to the Nielsen report. And now we get into that truly interesting space between the insane and the banal, the final paragraph. Interestingly, the study shows that high-def TV sets tend to be placed in the family or living rooms of most households, suggesting that if they do receive high-def TV signals, that programming may be more of a family viewing experience. Unquote the story. Equally interestingly, most of these sets are too big to fit anywhere else in the house. Thank you, Nielsen people. If high def is so remarkably better than regular def, how come so many people can't tell that they're not getting it? A question that may occur to you as well as me when I read the trades for you, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Change.
Everybody knows nothing makes a man look more manly and masculine than a full, well-trimmed beard. But how do you avoid the time and hassle of growing and trimming a face full of hair? Hi, Billy Mays, back, as if I ever left, from Mighty Beard Wizard, the amazing new product that puts the power of male secondary sexual characteristics in the palm of your hand. Ever wonder how people like me maintain a full, well-trimmed beard with a modern busy schedule? Mighty Beard Wizard is the answer. Imagine, in this one power-packed cylinder, you've got up to a year's worth of beards with no waiting, no itching, no trimming. Mighty Beard Wizard does it all. Ordinary beards require weeks, even months of painstaking growth. After a week or two, they start itching you and scratching your loved ones. And then there's the endless shaving and trimming to get just the look you want. But that's all in the past with Mighty Beard Wizard. Imagine, the same kind of power-packed airbrush that graphic artists and makeup people use is now downsized to fit in the palm of your hand. But this is no old-fashioned aerosol. Even in this experimental wind tunnel, Mighty Beard Wizard has the power to give this clean-shaven mannequin a full, well-trimmed beard, and to do it in seconds. And while you keep the rest of your face clean-shaven, you can't actually ruin the shape of your Mighty Beard Wizard beard because thanks to these patented micro-color pellets, Mighty Beard Wizard's color goes under your skin, way down to where the skin begins. Even when we use this super sharp razor to whack at it, nothing disappeared from a Mighty Beard Wizard beard. It's amazing! You pay hundreds of dollars to get a beard safely tattooed on your face, and you'd spend much more for laser tattoo removal. But Mighty Beard Wizard keeps you looking as well-groomed as me for just pennies an hour. Look, you get a full 8-ounce Mighty Beard Wizard dispenser and three special Mighty Beard Wizard color pellet refills for just $19.99. But if you order before dinner time, we'll give you two additional Mighty Beard Wizard dispensers. Plus, a Mighty Beard Wizard photonic enlarging mirror, accurate to within one whisker. Imagine, it's all yours for just $19.99. And if you mention my name, or that you saw this offer on TV, or that you were actually breathing at the time you heard about Mighty Beard Wizard, you'll get discount shipping, just like the pros use. Other artificial beard technologies can leave ugly rough patches or even scabs and scars. But not Mighty Beard Wizard. There's no side effect to be feared with a Mighty Beard Wizard beard.
Specify black, red, or natural. Allow 6 weeks to forget about delivery. Order now.
Now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Pretty good crop this week, I'd say. Charles Hamilton and girlfriend Brianna Latrice, heard of them? Have issued a joint public apology for last week's battle that resulted in Latrice punching Hamilton, a Harlem rapper, in the face. Nice people doing nice things. In a viral clip released last week, Charles Hamilton was shown taunting a visibly agitated Latrice about having to pick him up from the airport. Latrice then challenged her boyfriend to a battle, launching, that's more than enough. Dateline Philadelphia, a local newspaper in northwest Pennsylvania, apologized this week for running a classified advertisement that called implicitly for the assassination of U.S. President Barack Obama. The Warren Times Observer, with a circulation of about 11,000, ran the ad in Thursday's paper and pulled it as soon as it was discovered by a manager. Publisher John Eichert declined to identify the person who placed the ad and said he'd referred the case to local police and notified the Secret Service. Eichert said the representative who took the ad apparently didn't make the connection between the four assassinated presidents. The ad read, "May Obama follow in the footsteps of Lincoln, Garfield, McKinley, and Kennedy," and mistakenly allowed the ad to run. "It was just an honest mistake," he told Reuters. The Secret Service hasn't identified the person who placed the ad, and we're taking it seriously. Nice quality control in the newspaper biz. That's why there's Craigslist. Dateline Conway, South Carolina, the final executive to be sentenced in the biggest bankruptcy in South Carolina history is to spend 2.5 years behind bars. Former Home Gold financial officer Karen Miller cried this week as she apologized and told a judge she thinks every day about the investors who lost their life savings. Her attorney asked for probation so she could think of it every day, think of them every day on the outside. But the judge said it wouldn't be fair for her to avoid jail when five other executives of Home Gold and subsidiary Carolina Investors did not avoid jail. She pleaded guilty to conspiracy in the 2003 collapse of the companies in which about 8,000 investors lost $275 million. And that was when times were good. Investors had made good returns until Carolina Investors was taken over by Home Gold, which used money to make high-risk mortgage loans to people who didn't have enough money to pay them back. You tell me what's wrong with that business plan. Seriously. Egyptian Culture Minister Farouk Hosni, who wants to head UNESCO, apologized this week for saying in the past that he's ready to burn Israeli books should he find them in Egypt's libraries. "I'm a man of peace. I know that peace is through understanding and respect. On behalf of those values, I want to take back the words I said in May 2008, which were seen as a call to burn books in Hebrew. These words were shocking, and I understand that. I solemnly say I regret the words I spoke. These words are the opposite of what I believe and what I am," he told a French newspaper. Also, how likely are you to find Hebrew books in an Egyptian library? It's all moot. Fred Rogers is dead. Mr. Rogers isn't. Michael Kinsell has learned the difference. For 2 years, Kinsell, an 18-year-old resident of the San Diego area, has been trying to launch a children's television program akin to Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. To raise money, he rented space at the California Center for the Arts in Escondido, California, and planned a star-studded red carpet gala complete with a symphony orchestra, a 90-minute show, a tribute to the life and legacy of Rogers. Kinsell would name Rogers the first recipient of the Children's Hero Award and hand a $10,000 prize to Rogers' family. He would also be introduced as Rogers' successor. Both PBS and the organization that manages Rogers' intellectual property say they have no affiliation with Kinsell, his Children's Media Foundation, or the gala. They sent him letters asking him to stop, suggesting he has their endorsement. Star-studded, there is no evidence of any of the celebrities identified in the event website as sponsors. Tom Hanks, Eddie Murphy, Lily Tomlin, and 18 others, that they plan to be there, and the show has now been canceled. "It's all been a horrible misunderstanding," Kinsell said. "I'm deeply apologetic for anything we said or did that led people to believe there was an association with PBS or Mr. Rogers' organization. I don't know how they got started." It may have started, a San Diego newspaper suggests, when Kinsell called his prospective show Michael's Enchanted Neighborhood, or when he posed for a publicity photo in a red cardigan sweater, similar to the one Mr. Rogers wears. The Japanese ambassador to the United States apologized in person this week to the 73 surviving POWs of the Bataan Death March in the Philippines during World War II. Japanese Ambassador Fujisaki delivered an official apology to those survivors. "We extend a heartfelt apology for our country having caused tremendous damage and suffering to many people, including prisoners of war, those who've undergone tragic experience in the Bataan Peninsula and other places," Ambassador Ichiro Fujisaki said. The Japanese captured and force-marched 12,000 Americans and 68,000 Filipinos from the island of Corregidor to northern Luzon, denying them food and water and killing the stragglers. That's what they were apologizing for. Black Sabbath frontman Ozzy Osbourne is suing former bandmate Tony Iommi over the ownership of the group's name, according to Reuters. In a statement, Osbourne apologized for bringing the matter to court, but said he had tried to resolve it for 3 years amicably. He also wants people to watch his commercials. Officials at the Sedgwick County Zoo in Wichita are getting rid of blue snow cones after a mix-up involving commercial degreaser. Four people became ill when a zoo employee poured a degreasing agent into the snow cone machine instead of flavored syrup. The two bottles are the same size, shape, and color, and accidentally got stacked next to each other. A zoo spokeswoman said the employee didn't read the labels and apologized to families who got sick. And Ireland will reform its social services for children in line with the recommendations of a report cataloging decades of abuse by priests published last week. Prime Minister Brian Cowan apologized to victims for the state's failure to intervene in what the report described as endemic sexual abuse. "It is deeply shameful for all Irish people that this happened in our country and that for so long it was not confronted he told a news conference. Apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, quickly, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Scientists are for the first time objectively evaluating ways to help species adapt to rapid climate change via strategies that were considered too radical for serious consideration as recently as 5 or 10 years ago. Among these radical strategies currently being considered, so-called managed relocation, which is also known as assisted migration, involves manually moving species into more accommodating habitats where they're not currently found. Let's just get this little fella up here into a cooler climate. A new groundbreaking tool to help decision makers determine if and when and how to use managed relocation is described in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences in a current issue. Managed relocation, until now, has been eschewed by some scientists for fear that relocated species would overpopulate their new habitats, cause extinctions of local species, or clog water pipes, as invasive zebra mussels have done in the Great Lakes. Still, sounds like a good idea. Why is it once taboo, now potentially harmful, now being seriously considered? Because, says a researcher, it is becoming increasingly overwhelmingly evident that climate change is a reality. It is fast and large. Consequences will arise within decades, not centuries. So action seems much more important now than even 5 or 10 years ago. Now, he says, a do-nothing response to climate change involves significant risks. We can't continue to say, let nature run its course. There's no letting nature run its course anymore. Humans have already changed the world. That's what we wanted to do. That was the idea. Isn't that what they all say in beauty pageants? I want to change the world. The most comprehensive modeling yet carried out on the likelihood of how much hotter the Earth's climate will get in this century shows that without rapid and massive action, the problem will be about twice as severe as previously estimated 6 years ago and could be even worse than that. The study uses the MIT Integrated Global Systems Model, a detailed computer simulation of global economic activity and climate processes. The new research involved 400 runs of the model, with each run using slight variations, selected so that each run has about an equal probability of being correct based on present knowledge. The MIT model is the only one... Sounds worse. That's all I know. And there was a theory that as the Arctic melted and new vegetation grew, that vegetation would trap some of the carbon that was being released. But a new study says only for a little while, and then the excess carbon will overwhelm the ability of the new vegetation to absorb it. So don't rely on the tundra for our safety, ladies and gentlemen. News of the Warm, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Isn't that what it says on those plaques that they sell at the Inuit airports? Don't rely on the tundra? I'm not sure. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show from Chicago. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world, on the internet, on your computer, two different locations, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone at Stitcher.com. Available as a free download to members at www.audible.com/the show. And available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it would be just like me being able to remember all that if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. And I'll see you in print on the internet at HuffingtonPost.com and at TheAtlanticMagazine.com, where I've just joined as a correspondent. No, not paying me either. It's the new media, baby. A tip of the show chapeau to the Pittsburgh, Chicago, San Diego, and Hawaii desks. And thanks to Liz Bustamante here at WBEZ in Chicago for helping to make today's Liz Show possible. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The email address for this broadcast and playlists of the music heard hereon should be available at harryshearer.com. And there should be world peace. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from Chicago.